Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel, as today we will continue with our Around the Horn monthly fixed income roundtable podcast with our colleagues from UBS Asset Management. On a monthly basis, we do hear from top portfolio managers and business heads from Asset Management's muni, taxable fixed income, and liquidity teams. We do hear candidly from them on their views on the markets and what they believe you should be focused on within the fixed income space. So at this time, I will pass it over to Anthony Liotti, head of the Fixed Income SMA Advisory Group, to moderate this month's roundtable. Anthony, welcome back. I'll pass it over to you.
Another month has passed. It seems like as we move closer into the summer months, you would expect to see a lot of real changes, but in so many changes, so many ways, nothing's changed. The volatility that we experienced so much throughout 2023 has obviously continued well into the first quarter of 2024. The movements in the market are, as we're seeing today here, and the 10th of April, the whipsaw movement, if you will, in the rate markets, this continues to sort of baffle portfolio managers and investors as we just kind of try to decipher just how much of a need for Fed intervention the economy is going to need this year. Since your last call in March, the data sets that we have gotten within the marketplace continue to show a fairly good amount of strength and resiliency to the U.S. economy, and there really doesn't appear to be any broad-based signs that is stalling. Yes, clearly, like with any economic cycle, there are pockets of weakness. Some of that, I'd say, is a bit more evident within or at the consumer level, and we'll continue to monitor, to see if those cracks, if you will, begin to increase in size and scope. But for now, nothing is really causing major concern at a high level. All in all, say this economy is confusing. To provide some insight on any thought of the expectation of a recession, right? I mean, who would have thought that that word would even be in our vernacular in 2024, perhaps? But our analysts on the fixed income team at UBS models out, think about this, only a 10% chance of recession in 24 and less than a 15% of recession to the first half of 2025. I find that interesting when you compare that data versus the Fed's desire to cut, right? So we've mentioned this before, higher for longer. That does clearly, after today's CPI number, clearly remains the narrative for at least the end of the year. And that is a good thing and a welcome thing for fixed income investors. Again, I've talked about that. Why is it important or good? Because for higher for longer, it just enables our clients to just capture historically attractive taxable or tax-exempt yields for an extended period of time. That's what we want. We don't necessarily need bonds to rally. I'm just going to be buying bonds at lower yields and higher prices. Let them stay where they're at right now, really attractive historical levels. When we turn to the supportive data, this is where things really, once again, got a bit interesting. Last week's March employment number announcement saw another surprise upside to the health of the economy. And yes, there will be revisions, but four times in the past year, the actual non-farm payroll number has been over 100,000, the estimate. That is quite amazing on itself. Today, we got the stronger than expected CPI number for the third consecutive month, right? That is, once again, when we're seeing the reaction to the marketplace now is the expectation coming into 2024 by the Fed was that they would cut three times. The market was expecting a lot more cuts. Now, we look at the mid-April point, the market is pricing in probably not three, but two. And I'll put this out there, there's a good argument to be made. At some point, we could see that number at zero, right? You really could. That is a potential out there, as much as the Fed does really want to, at some point this year, cut the Fed funds rate. So let me pause there. I'm going to turn it over to our fixed income PMs. Started off like we always do on the short end of the market with our liquidity team and Mr. Dave Walczak. Take it away, Dave, my friend.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Anthony. So I guess just picking up what you were touching on toward the end there, just as it relates to market expectations of the Fed this year, we continue to see a pretty big repricing in Fed funds futures contracts. Obviously, today, after the stronger than expected CPI, we've seen some pretty big moves. So now we're only seeing about 40 basis points worth of cuts priced into the December contract. Now compare that to 67 basis points worth of cuts just at the end of March. And then, as you were kind of mentioning before, Anthony, too, in terms of where, you know, how much the market was pricing in earlier this year, you know, we had 168 basis points priced in back on January 12th. That was the, you know, largest amounts of cuts that were being priced in by the market. So, yeah, we definitely have seen some pretty big repricing here via Fed funds futures. So, you know, as we sit here today, after the CPI number, the first meeting with a full 25 basis point cut is actually the November meeting. That's currently showing about 27 basis points worth of cuts priced in there. And yeah, as you mentioned, you know, the most recent Fed dot plot released after the March meeting showed a median expectation of 3 cuts. But I think it's also important to point out that it would only take one member moving their expectation higher by 25 basis points for that median expectation to actually reflect only 2. So I would imagine, you know, given some of the data that we've gotten after the March meeting and assuming kind of this underlying strength in the economy continues, you know, we may see that that median expectation adjust the next time the dots are refreshed after the June meeting. Yeah, just, you know, really quickly recapping some of the inflation data today, because I think it really is worth highlighting just some of the specific details because it is so critical to the Fed's thinking here. You know, one of the measures that Chair Powell has kind of mentioned that the Fed kind of pays close attention to is the super core measure. So that would be core services ex housing. Just looking at the performance of that figure over the past 3 months, in January, it was up 85 basis points. In February, it was up 47. And then this, you know, last month in March, it was up 65 basis points. So clearly, a lot of inflationary pressure is still emanating from kind of that super core measure. And then even looking at the overall core CPI, you can kind of see just the acceleration that we've seen in the past 2 months. You know, the annualized rate over the first 3 months of this year is 4.5%. You know, over the trailing 6 months, it's 3.9%. And then on a year-over-year basis, it's 3.8. So that kind of gives you a sense of just the underlying strength that, you know, we're seeing over the past 2 months in core CPI. So, yeah, so in terms of, you know, the reaction that we've seen in the very front end of the curve, obviously we've seen some widening on bank fixed rate paper. We also have seen over the past 2 weeks some spread widening in floating rate paper as well. So that's kind of been a welcome development from the market standpoint a little bit. You know, better entry points for benign exposure at some of these wider levels. But yeah, we would imagine, you know, today's news to continue to work its way through the markets. And, you know, we'll see ultimately kind of where levels kind of shake out here over the next few days. With that, I'll pass it over to Dave Rothar to talk about kind of what we're seeing a little bit further out the curve and kind of the ultra short and short duration space.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Dave. So, you know, it's hard to believe the two-year hit of a low 4.14% back on January 12th. And here we are 4 months later, we're up about 83 basis points. So obviously quite a move. Year to date with these higher yields, flows have been coming into the fixed income space. These technicals have been very supportive of credit. Today's evidence of that with on a day like today, with rates up, call it plus 20 basis points on the day, from what we can tell today, IG credit has been holding. So, you know, here's my phrase for the day, yield wins again. So yields have been, you know, attractive, money's been coming in, and it's been very supportive. So second point is economic growth has been supportive of credit spreads as well. So looking at the 1-3 U.S. corporate index from Bloomberg, spreads are in about 20 basis points. Looking a little bit deeper into it, year-to-date, financials have outperformed industrials by about 20 basis points. But as Dave alluded to, some of that outperformance has kind of been holding the last, you know, week or so with that 20 basis points. So one last comment on financials. We have many of the big U.S. banks reporting starting this Friday for their Q1 earnings. So that's going to help set the tone of financials as well as bring some new issuance. So with that being said, I'll pass it on to Dave Vignola. Dave?
Yeah, no, thanks, David. You know, on the investment grade side, I think the dominant theme throughout the year has been the attractive investment grade credit. You know, we were hovering between, you know, 5 and 5.5% for most of the year, but now, you know, recently we've been trending upward with the recent rise in interest rates. And I think that the current, you know, yield on the corporate index is around 5.5%. So historically, very attractive entry point, and we haven't seen these types of yields in the investment grade corporate bond markets since really the financial crisis. You know, I think the second, you know, driver of this demand that we're seeing that really economic growth remains quite positive. Expectations for first quarter growth are around 2%. You know, positive growth, attractive yields. It's a very positive environment for investment grade credit market, and we've seen demand for this, the asset class remain quite robust and consistent throughout the year. I think inflows into the asset class are over $100 billion. And we've seen strong supply to somewhat offset that, but supply so far this year is up about 30%. But it's starting to slow. We had a lot of supply come in the first half of the year ahead of the fourth quarter with the presidential election. And we saw some deals come from an M&A activity perspective that brought more issuance into the marketplace. But in general, we expect supply to flow. And if demand stays quite robust, the technical environment in investment-grade credit remains quite positive. And the fundamental side, it's really the same story. It's been pretty strong fundamentals and expectations for first quarter earnings when, David Wathar just mentioned the banks are announced earnings on Friday. Expectations from our analyst team is that earnings are going to be pretty robust and pretty solid for the first quarter of 2024. So when you have strong technicals, strong fundamentals, attractive yields, it really bodes well for the investment grade credit space. And we're seeing that in demand. In the asset class. Now, some of the things we've been doing is we're overweight the financial sector, the money center banks in particular, and some of the strong regional banks, as well as the technology and the pharmaceutical sector that recently have brought new issues to the marketplace because of M&A activity, which came with very attractive new issue concessions. So being very tactical, I would say in general, we've been a little more up in quality in terms of our preference for security selection. Stronger triple B credits, and then as well as moving into some single A credits that we continue to see opportunity in the sector. From a credit curve perspective, we still like kind of the belly of the curve in that 5 to 10 year part of the range. We like to lock in these yields for a longer time frame. So, with that, we've been overweight kind of the 5 to 10 year part of the credit curve, and continue to look for opportunities there where we're looking to extend out from, 1 to 2 years out to the 5 to 7 year part of the curve when looking for opportunities. But in general, I would say the credit market overall remains on solid footing. And even though we're seeing recent data with inflation being quite sticky and volatility, as Anthony Liotti mentioned, in the marketplace, the credit market still remains in a very strong position because fundamentals remain quite strong and the all-in yields are very attractive. So with that, I will pass over to Anders Nelson to talk about high yield.
Thanks, David. High yield spreads continue to look rich as they hover just above 300 basis points near the two-year tights. Yields, on the other hand, look attractive at 7.8%, which is keeping demand firm as you don't usually see these yields outside of times of market stress. Given the strong fundamental and technical backdrop, dip buyers are quick to step in, especially in harder-to-find short-duration paper. Something to watch is the lowest rated part of our market. The highly levered balance sheets aren't able to rely on cash flow alone and will need access to low interest rates or otherwise will have to resort to liability management exercises, which we've seen pick up over the last month. This serves as a reminder of how important security selection is to avoid names that are solely reliant on extreme measures to survive and why we seek to avoid distressed names. It's a very different story for higher quality issuers as they are benefiting from a wide open primary market. New issue activity is running at twice the pace of last year, and 85% of proceeds are going towards refis, which is lowering concerns around the maturity wall as bonds are being taken out proactively. So in summary, high-yield credit remains firm, and we think especially the shorter duration part of the market is a sweet spot between high income and managing an uncertain rate environment while benefiting from issuers proactively refinancing front-end maturities. I'll now hand it over to David Michael to speak on emerging markets.
Thank you, Anders. Emerging market spreads continue to rally across both emerging market sovereigns and corporate debt. Net spreads are tighter over the last month. EM debt supply has taken a step back from the torrid rate that we saw to start the year. And over the last month, we've seen a drastic reduction in new debt supply. We continue to believe supply will remain low for this year, leaving us with net negative supply. That's maturities and coupons being far outpacing new bonds coming into the asset class. a few headlines that have been driving emerging markets. First, last night, Fitch placed China's credit rating on a negative outlook. The change in outlook was due to increased debt and more uncertain economic prospects as they transition from a property-related growth to what the government views as a more sustainable growth model. Senegal held presidential elections on March 24th with a surprise opposition win in the first round.
We expect to see snap parliamentary elections in July, but we do not expect the policies to be radical, and we see this as constructive over the medium term. Turkey held local elections on March 31st, and the opposition retained control of major cities, which struck a blow to Erdogan's AKP party. The market is now focusing on elections in South Africa that will take place on May 29th. The ruling party, ANC, is losing ground in the polls and may need to form a coalition in order to retain power. The ANC party has been in power since 1994 elections that marked the end of apartheid. We've moved from presidential elections in Taiwan, Pakistan, Indonesia, and Senegal, and now focus on South Africa, Panama, and Mexico over the next few months. And as a reminder, U.S. elections are still at the end of this year. Given this higher-than-expected growth environment, combined with the positive technicals I was talking about, supply-demand dynamics, this supports our view to maintain our positive outlook for emerging market credit. Now let me hand it off to Ryan Nugent for an update from our municipal team.
Thanks a lot. Up until the strong payrolls print on 4-5, munis were on track for a third consecutive week of municipal market underperformance versus treasuries. However, with treasuries selling off, with Friday's sell-off in treasuries, high-grade munis ended up outperforming for the week, except for the two-year spot. Including this morning's sell-off in treasuries after the CPI print, we currently sit slightly above 63% in the two-year muni treasury ratio, approximately 58% on the 5- and the 10-year ratio, and slightly below 84% in the 30-year. As I stated earlier, munis have been slowly underperforming treasuries for the past few weeks, but municipals' reaction to today's move could undo all that. Municipals tend to be slower to react to large treasury moves. While we have been cheaper before this move, we are still rich to their one-year averages in every spot, except for the two-year that currently sits right at the one-year average, according to Bloomberg data. All of this is a function of seasonal weakness. While we haven't seen the tax time outflows yet, we have definitely seen flat to only slightly positive inflows so far in April, versus the much stronger inflows into LIPA reporting funds in the month of March. Current month reinvestment is the lowest of the year, and while it is set to rise progressively, it won't probably turn back to negative net supply until sometime in June. Lastly, increased supply year over year has put upward pressure on yields and has us off about 55 basis points year to date on the 2-year, 40 basis points on the 5-year, 37 on the 10, and 39 on the 30-year, as we are experiencing a bear flattening curve shift. The curve shift has the Barclays Muni Index off 59 basis points month to date and 97 basis points year to date. So what are we doing to stay active and produce returns? Our focus has been on maintaining a barbell strategy where we are stressing VRDNs or variable rate demand notes and fixed rate notes in the 6 to 18 month range and pairing that with the 13 to 16 year area of the curve and the 23 to 25 year area of the curve. We've been avoiding the 2 to 10 year area of the curve given the inversion and flatness of the total return curve. However, we've been lucky enough to find wider spreading names such as utilities and hospitals in that 2 to 10 year area of the curve, we've been adding what we feel when they are offered at near fair value. Lastly, while we have found opportunities in the secondary market, the primary market remains the best value. We have been participating in many large Texas school district PSF deals, as well as geo names in the states of California, Washington, and New York, both in the negotiated and competitive space. We feel the concession in these deals versus the secondary has widened as cash inflows and reinvestment has slowed, thus creating a buying opportunity for those who have been patient.
Great, Ryan. Great stuff. Thank you. Thank you all, team. With that, we'll bid you a farewell for another month, and we'll talk to you in May. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate it.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement statements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.